regular meeting of the Oceana Community Service District Board of Directors for Wednesday, July 12th into session. Roll call, please.
Director Benet.
Here.
Director Angelo.
Here.
Director Colwell.
Here.
Vice President Austin. President White.
Here. I wonder if Director Benet would join, would lead us in the pledge.
Absolutely. Ready? There it is.
Oh, sorry.
I think we all did it.
Who moved it? Fine.
All right, ready? Salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I've got time to turn around.
Can we have the agenda review? Do we have any changes?
Yes, President White, Ms. Cassiola will provide some amendments.
So, in item 8, or Board President, members of the board, in item 8B, we've provided a revised staff report. We added the CSDA chapter meeting that is to be on in Templeton on July 27th, a pending payment to be no more than $70 so we can take advantage of the $10 discount if we pay before July 20th. And that would take the new cash disbursements to $63,134.36. So at the appropriate time, the motion would be to approve item 8B as amended.
Thank you. Do I have any recommendation on the agenda?
Looks good to me.
I make a motion that we approve the agenda. Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That carries 4-0, one absent. Thank you. Okay, now we need to close the meeting for a closed session.
Yeah, with
APG?
No members of the public, so.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, we would take public comment on the closed agenda. Closed
session. I'm sorry. Closed session pursuant to Government Code 54957, performance evaluation of the general manager. We'll now move to closed session.
Grandson's birthday too.
Okay.
And my son's on the 16th and I'm on the 20th.
Yeah.
That's so much sugar.
Okay, APG. Okay, I'd like to call the meeting back to order. It is now 6:27. Resume. I'd like to announce that of closed session, no action. And move on to public comment. Comments on items not in the agenda. I don't see anyone coming forward. So we'll move on to special presentations and reports. Field Supervisor Tony Maraschino.
Good evening, Board. Tony Maraschino. All right. Currently, Lopez has delivered 245 acre feet to Oceano since the beginning of the year. We have pumped less than an acre foot of water, mostly due to sampling. Lopez is currently at 60%, which is 29,635 acre feet. And we had one SSO last month. It was a lateral. A lot of just paper debris caused it. All right. So we've had 9 customer service calls, 7 USAs, 8 work orders. We had one after-hours call-out that was for a treadmill blocking an alleyway on the 4th of July.
A treadmill.
Did you spin your wheels on that one?
That was actually a full-size treadmill, yeah. It was actually heavy. I was really surprised. About 300 pounds. I didn't, that was heavy. All right. We had to attend to the lift station multiple times in the, last 2 weeks just because of how many people have been here in Oceano. A lot of debris and stuff in the lift station itself. So we had to vacuum that out twice, two different times. We had a year-end inventory for the yard. And we also had Carrie come out and spot check the inventory of the yard vehicles, equipment. She covered more than spot checking. She was, it was quite a bit. She was going through the list, just how we inventoried almost. Continued sewer jetting. CCRs, consumer confidence reports. We had to hand deliver a few areas that are 1 meter, a master meter covering some of these parks. And they went out in last billing, and they're also on our website if the customers want to look it up. And we also have hard copies available at the office. Everybody in the field staff attended a leak detection class here at OCSD, the boardroom. There's about 40 people there. It was a really good class all day. We had to upgrade a service from a 5/8 to a 1-inch due to development. And we actually went around and got to verify all the lock-offs that we've had for the past year. We have a list of about 18 to 20, if I remember correctly. We verified, you know, about once a year, which was good for us to get out there and do it. Any questions?
Any questions?
Nope.
Questions?
All right. Thank you.
I would like to publicly thank Tony and the rest of our field crew for being willing at 8:30 in the morning on the 4th of July to go get that treadmill, which was 8 feet long and blocked a major alley. And if you think about the 4th of July and all the fireworks, could have been a real serious challenge. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yes, thank you.
I don't see Chief Lieberman here, so we'll move on to OCSD General Manager Pavel Ogren.
President White, members of the board, the first comment I do want to make, though, is with respect to fire and Mr. Lieberman in a way, because after the 4th of July, we did get a few phone calls from individuals who are very frustrated with illegal fireworks. Understandably, that, you know, we have a lot of fireworks on July 4th. There's maybe a little bit in the holidays, New Year's Eve. It's not really a thing that happens every year. And I just reassured them that every year your board goes through a process of determining what the action is going to be. And obviously individuals are free to come and speak and try to persuade you in the spring of every year. So we did get some, albeit a very limited number of complaints. Obviously, the illegal fireworks is a different issue than safe and sane, but apparently there was a lot of activity in Oceano over the July 4th weekend. With, obviously, my items are mostly on the open agenda. The other one that there's been outreach to me is one of the nonprofits that's working with Oceano Elementary School and wanting to work with the school in order to develop a composting program with the kids, food composting and that. And I know that it's happened at other school districts, so we can anticipate a request from one of the local nonprofits to see if we can help in funding that program. I'm not sure what the proposal is going to be overall, but it's certainly within the garbage powers of the board that food, you know, any type of the recycling solid waste. So I anticipate that that's going to come forward. It might even be on your next agenda. And with that, I will defer until the open agenda items.
Thank you. Thank you. Seeing nobody from the sheriff's office, we move to board of directors. Let's go down the alphabetical list. Director Angelo.
I don't have anything, thank you.
Director Brunet?
I also do not have anything.
President White? I can announce that there were no major events fire events during 4th of July. There were no fires, no structure fires or anything major. And I also note that since that time, we've had a fire crew on the Alamo Fire from the second day it started. The brush truck that we have has been there with a full crew. And it has caused a little bit of shortage on our staff, but we are fully staffed at the fire stations. And I have not heard word that they've come home. They serve 24 hours on and then 24 off. So, but they are starting to demobilize a little bit of that fire at this time, but we'll see what happens this weekend. And that's my report. Other than the fire, we're meeting Friday morning, having a special meeting on fire, dealing with our responsibilities in the lot cleanups have been done and the assessments. We'll be asked to approve the assessments on the lot cleanups in the whole fire area.
And that's for
Friday.
The weed abatement program.
Yes. Yeah. Director Caldwell, this isn't alphabetical.
I attended the State Water Subcontractors Advisory Committee this afternoon, as a matter of fact. The this committee is just getting their footing, and so things are developing along the way. There was a brief report today by Wes Thompson concerning several things, and you may have heard in the news recently one of the reports that Kiewit was awarded a $275.4 million contract for their work up at the Oroville Dam. And that covers, I think, through calendar year 2019. So that'll probably be extended from there, is our guess. But in any event, the primary purpose of this subcommittee is to monitor the various contracts of water between the County of San Luis, the State Water District Project, and the various subcontractors that contract for water through the county. It's a bit of an unwieldy issue, but it's certainly one that is deserving of and getting good attention. Right now, we are significantly interested in the development of the emergency water distribution systems and policies. There was beginning work on that now, and Wes and Jill Ogren are indicating that the county will probably propose some policy issues and approaches by the time of the next committee meeting, which will be September 13. In fact, Andrew, I need to talk to you about that because I may not be here for that meeting. And you, I think you're the alternate, aren't you?
For the State Water, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I arrived internationally at 10 o'clock in the evening on the 12th. And if anything goes wrong in those connections, I'll be somewhere with a flat tire. Anyway, at the next meeting, it'll really be interesting because there are a number of policy considerations that we want to know about and potentially take positions on. And, of course, we need to see what the county is proposing in that regard. So that's it.
Thank you. Thank you. Public comment?
If I might, a little bit on Director Colwell's report about the county making emergency program policy recommendations. We want to keep in mind as well, since we have contracts for State Water with the county, it's not simply a process of the county taking policy recommendations to the Board of Supervisors and the Board of Supervisors then having the unilateral decision-making process. The development of an emergency program is going to also require concurrence with all of those who are participating, all the partners, contractual partners with the county in the State Water Project.
Thank you. Anything else? Need to call for public comment on special presentations and reports. And seeing nobody come forward, we'll move on to the consent agenda. And here again, I need to call for public comment.
Madam President, we do have some correspondence on the consent agenda from an individual in the public, and I've handed out the correspondence to all the board members, and there's copies available at the table for others as well. I thought I would characterize it real quickly and respond to it real quickly. But the correspondence is from Julie Tacker, Administrative Assistant with the J.H. Edwards Company out of Los Osos. And what she notes is that in our cash disbursements folder, we have modified how we're reporting to your board cash disbursements. And specifically, we've modified how we're reporting payroll. And in the correspondence, Ms. Tacker expresses some concern about these changes and refers to two articles regarding prior general managers that really date back several years with respect to some challenges that were previously encountered by the district with respect to payroll. The point here is that previously, in response to some of those improprieties or questionable actions in the district's past history, the payroll reporting that you had seen on your agenda kind of listed all the different positions or basically individuals. And I can understand how after some improprieties and issues that the district had to deal with prior to our current efforts, that was a response in order to make sure that it was on the agenda. And Ms. Tacker pleads to your board to resume that prior way of reporting and speaks to the issue of the need for transparency and reporting and auditors and those kind of things. And yet, that's exactly why we've made the change. So what we're doing, and it previously explained to your board, is we're modifying what you're seeing on your disbursement packages so that the auditors can trace disbursements to board action so that they can see more clearly that the audit trail between the cash that's going out of the district and what's been reported to your board is ties back to all of the accounting reports in a much better fashion. So, for example, the cash disbursement for net pay is a single lump sum amount that then gets transferred to Rabobank, who then Rabobank, through the electronic payment functions, pays, distributes the checks to all the different employees. And so this is part of the effort that Ms. Cassiola is working on, is making sure that the various reports that we generate on a monthly basis and the reconciliations that we're doing and how we code them to the general ledger are all more easily audited by the auditors. And that's part of what we've been working with them on over the last couple years. In the 3 years that I've been with the district, we've had numerous items that have come to your board, like the accounting for the sheriff buildings and some other items that we've needed your approval on. But behind the scenes, we've been working with the auditors to try to really clean up reconciliations and how we code things to different accounts in order to help them be able to audit the district. And that's part of this change in the payroll reporting to your board. And we looked at it again today and probably make some more minor adjustments in future meetings. But the purpose here is that in what's being reported to your board, we want to make sure that there's a nice, clean audit trail so that the auditors can come in and confirm that when they look at payroll that everything was reported to your board. So certainly I understand Ms. Tacker's concerns about past history, but that was past history, and the changes that we're making today are the details associated with making audits cleaner and improving transparency. And so I wanted to make sure to characterize that correspondence since it directly related to public comment on items on your consent agenda.
Thank you very much.
I have a question. Can we discuss anything if it's consent agenda from this?
Yeah, so the appropriate is brief discussions on the consent agenda are okay. If you want to get into detailed discussions, then you usually pull the item for separate discussion.
And the only other thing, and I completely agree with everything you said as far as all the efforts of what we're trying to do as a district, would it be of any benefit, like the last meeting we talked about the audits, we talked about having the audit as well as the prior years for comparison, would that be of any benefit here for like the previous pay period, like to show there isn't some outstanding, you know, big jump
yes.
in trend or something?
Yeah, I think so, and we could do that because then, and I think that's a good idea. Obviously, from the prior period, we're still going to have the information, and I'm not exactly sure how Carrie sets up her worksheets, but it'd probably be easy enough to just continue to use the same worksheet, and then when you're done with one, you know, you hide the column and you go to the next column.
Right.
And so if we printed the two columns side by side, what it would highlight to your board was, is there something that changed? Or
right.
So we know on July 1st there is some cost of living adjustments that are coming in. So those, I think, are 2%. So we'd expect a little bump up next time. Once in a while, we have two payroll periods that hit between board meetings. Usually it's just one payroll period. Between each board period. So if we have two payroll periods, then, you know, you'll see double the amount. But, yeah, we can certainly do that. That won't be difficult, and it provides a good snapshot to see did anything change from the prior pay period or anything jumping out. Next pay period, there will be something because my contract provides for any vacation time that I haven't used as of December 31st of a particular year, I don't get to bank it, but I get paid off on my next anniversary date. Wasn't something that I necessarily wanted, but I think that the board at the time wanted to make sure I didn't go off on extended vacation, so it was sort of don't get to bank much. So the next pay period will include that 20 hours of unused vacation leave. And so in doing a comparison of one pay period versus another, you'll see a minor difference, and then we could explain on that sheet, you know, why is there a variation, which, again, is something that I'm sure would please the auditors because they often, when they're auditing, wanting to look at the same, what are the variations? Why are we having changes from one period to another or one year to another? So.
Yeah.
We can certainly work on that as well.
But, Madam President, throwing it out to you and the board, does that sound reasonable, that discussion, the idea there?
Sounds reasonable to me, particularly with Paavo's analysis.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, and we don't need any board action on it. We'll just,
no,
we'll do that. Yeah, that's good feedback.
Okay.
Unless there's other discussion, I'd make a motion. I'd like to make a motion that we would approve the consent agenda as amended.
Second?
I'd second that.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. No? Carries 4-0. 1 absent. All right. Move on to our business items, A, B, C, D, and E. I'll call for public comment. And seeing no one come forward, I will close public comment and move on to business item 9A, notice of a public workshop on integrated regional water resources management at the Oceano CSD Board, 1655 Front Street, on Thursday, that's tomorrow, from 6 to 8 p.m.
And Madam President, members of the board, I wanted to just create a separate business item on this one in the event that your board wanted to talk about it, but also because any individual who's interested and pulls up our agenda on the website and goes to this 9A will have a link then to a survey, which the county is encouraging members of the public to fill out as well. So to me, it was the easiest way to kind of emphasize this item, the workshop for tomorrow night, as well as provide the web link if any individuals in the public are interested or if any board members are interested in filling out that survey. I haven't looked at it yet, so I'm not sure what the details are. But again, the county, through the Integrated Regional Water Management Program, is encouraging public participation in the survey. As a real quick note, this week they're working throughout the county on having these regional water resource workshops. And tomorrow night, the one in your board's chambers here in Oceano covers the five cities area. So they're also going to be meeting on the Mesa at a separate time in different areas. But this is the meeting for individuals from the public who are interested and who live or reside or own property within the five cities area.
Yeah, I did call up that survey today, and it was interesting. Of course, I couldn't figure out how to fill it out, but it's operator error as usual. But I thought it was interesting. They're looking at our priorities on a whole bunch of things, water management, water shortage, water quality. I mean, there's just all kinds of issues that can be discussed. And I will assume they have the same survey that we could fill out tomorrow night.
Yes, I'm not sure if they're going to have hard copies or if their expectation is we can go online, but if you want some operator assistance, we can certainly find an elementary school kid who's good with computers.
Yeah, there's a seven-year-old who lives in my neighborhood. But I know I plan on attending. I don't know if any other board members plan on attending.
I'm definitely going to try.
I'm not sure.
I'm glad you mentioned the different types of interests that they had identified. So in the Integrated Regional Water Management Program, there's five different primary goals associated with it. Water supply, flood protection, ecosystem restoration, stormwater management, and groundwater management.
Yeah.
I knew I could get all five. So anybody who's interested in any of those aspects is encouraged to fill out the survey.
And I think the deadline to fill out the survey, I think it was like the 17th or the 18th of this month. Okay. So it's another week or so. So
no action items on that business item, but just more of an emphasized public outreach on it.
Okay, then we can move on to 9B. Consideration to approve a purchase order to repair the roof at 1655 Front Street with a budget adjustment in the amount of $40,000.
So, Madam President, members of the board, this item we've been discussing since around February. And we were concerned about not wanting to go over budget in last fiscal year. But there were some other items we were able to replace with savings, like some of our meter reading equipment. But certainly the roof is in pretty significant need of replacement and repair. Some good photos in the agenda package, I believe, that show some of the existing. The biggest concern is that they peel off the remaining existing roof and they find water damage or some dry rot underneath there. So the bid, which is around $35,000 or so, excludes any of repair work that might be necessary. And that they, though, have provided, and I really like their bid approach, and they're the low bidder, of $45 per sheet for replacement of decking. So the recommendation includes about a 10% contingency, slightly higher than 10%. I rounded it off to $40,000, in which case, President White, you would be, under your board's policies right now, the president has to sign the purchase order, and so any modifications to that purchase order in the event that they find root rot will also require your signature. If it's extensive enough where we would go over the $40,000 budget, then we'd have to come back to the board as a whole, and I would anticipate we'd have to act with a special meeting because we would need to respond to the contractor relatively quickly. In terms of that 10% contingency, it would cover a significant number of square footage, over probably about 2,700 square foot of decking, which is clearly well more than half of it. The contingency there for any decking replacement is probably pretty good. The other concern was what if any of the roof beams are actually have any significant damage to them, in which case that would just have to be dealt with when we open it up. But we certainly want to get on their list because it's sort of first come, first serve, and the roofing contractors are really busy this year after last year's rains, and we want to get into the queue so the work is done before April, before the rains start coming back.
Any questions?
No. Glad this is coming now so we can get it taken care of. Yeah. The pictures were...
a little bit startling.
Yeah, you can definitely see the need.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. I entertain a motion.
I would move that we approve the $40,000, including the possible adjustment for the roof repairs.
Oops.
No, go ahead.
Need to be restated another way?
Or multiple motions, because...
all three.
What we have here also is the budget adjustment and the direction of the president. So there's three different... I think that Director Colwell sort of covered A and part of B. A friendly recommendation might be just to approve staff recommendations, and then we don't have to. What we did on the budget adjustment is basically allocated half the cost through the governmental fund contingencies to reflect the fire side of the building, because the governmental fund pays for fire operations. And then the other half, the budget adjustments, really would relate to the water fund and the garbage fund and the sewer fund, using the administrative cost allocations, excluding the fire fund, since we're already going to cover half of that because of their share of it. So,
well, in view of that, I would like to amend my motion that we as a board approve the purchase order and the recommendations of staff.
Second. Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Did you get that? The final second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Carries 4-0. Moving right along to 9C.
Madam President. Did you want to read it?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Review and discuss the leak detention report from the California Rural Water Association.
And I did not ask Tony to prepare any comments, but certainly he is free to come up and discuss it as well. So what you have attached are excerpts from the CRWA report. I am supposed to, based on State Water Board and Department of Water Resources, whenever we talk about work that there is funding, that they're funding is to make sure to recognize them. So the California State Water Board funded the California Rural Water Association to come out and do some leak detection work on our behalf through their technical assistance program. One of the biggest benefits of CRWA coming out is to really work with Tony and Jason and Casey on how do you go about, you know, some of it's training, but showing them equipment and really getting them up to speed with the state of the art on doing leak detection work. And so there's multiple benefits associated with that effort. Their leak detection work is part of our efforts under the Water Resource Reliability Program, which the State Water Board is also funding to a tune of about $198,000, which is going to be a big effort that we're embarking upon. In order to update the master water plan, do the evaluation of the pipes that are in our system and all of the deferred infrastructure replacement that we have. And so what Tony did, in knowing that CRWA was only going to come in for a limited period of time and not test the entire system, is he identified those pipes that he thought were most important for them to test on the get-go. And the master water plan that was prepared in 2009 already identified over 20 line replacement projects. And those line replacement projects, though, were based on fire flow deficiencies or water quality deficiencies. And water quality, I need to make sure to clarify a little bit, because certainly we meet water quality requirements throughout the distribution system. And Tony mentioned during his operations report that the consumer confidence report has been distributed further throughout the community. And it's that consumer confidence report, which is a regulatory report for the community, that identifies what were our water quality achievements. Did we comply with all the regulations? So that's the document each year that we have to send to our customers and property owners to report to them, to the public, our water quality. And so we meet drinking water standards. But there's lines that dead end, and so there's not good water circulation in them. And so when water gets stagnant, then we do have concerns, and it can affect taste and odors and some of those other types of parameters that aren't health and safety issues, but taste and odor affect, you know, how much we like to drink the water. So the Master Water Plan identified two major areas, one where old lines need to be replaced because they're too small, and we've got some fire hydrants that the fire department knows they're not going to get a lot of water out of. And then second, water quality issues associated with the lack of looping. And so then the leak detection program, Tony identified the criteria that, okay, other than those pipelines, what are the other ones we should start testing for leaks? And so older pipes that haven't been put on the list already is sort of the biggest. And maybe back to 1952 even was one of the, 52 was one of the older pipes that they tested. So in working with the California Rural Water Association, Tony identified which pipes we need to test next. There's about 3 days worth of testing that covered just over 2 miles of pipeline and found zero leaks, which is good. Overall, it represents about 7.5%, somewhere 7-8% of our system. So it's a small snapshot of the system overall, but still some good indications that that even some of the older pipes, the system is still pretty tight. Okay, so I provided the excerpts just to show the streets that were tested and their conclusions that they found no leaks in that 7-8% of our system. So what's the next steps then? Certainly there's, through the Water Resource Reliability Program, $150,000 of the funding that we've gotten are targeted to the leak detection program. But there's more than just going out there and testing to see if we have leaks. It's also going to include updating the master water plan. And it's going to be including setting up the model in the office and with the operators so that every time we're doing meter readings, we can plug data that we're selling water into the model, and then Tony will be plugging production information into there so that we can then keep track of the data on how is the system doing in comparing water production versus water sales. A little bit more of a background on that. The ADW, American Water Works Association, and this is part of slides that Tony provided to me through the CRWA's training session, the 40 operators that were in our offices and in these chambers last week through going through some training. But AWWA basically says that if your water losses are at less than 10% in California, then you're doing a pretty good job. They identify percentages in different parts of the nation that vary. And we saw some percentages that were higher and probably in wetter areas where they're not as concerned about water resources as we here are on the arid west. So developing the grant program will help develop the program so that we can input our data on an ongoing basis and keep track of what our losses are. And there's two different types of losses. There's unaccounted for losses, and then there's accounted for losses. So when we're doing fire flow testing and other types of line flushings, we'll measure the amount of water that is used, or we'll estimate it during those events. And those are accounted for water losses, because obviously we're not selling water that goes outside for some of those maintenance purposes. And then the remaining is unaccounted for water. And the other percentage that I've heard in the past is that that unaccounted water, if it's under 7%, then you're doing really well. So it's the 7 to 10% benchmark that we'll be looking at over time to see how tight is the water system. Now, in addition to helping set up spreadsheets so we can monitor it, and in addition to the education that they've provided us for the equipment, Tony's also gone out there and gotten some estimates from private organizations that will do the entire system leak detection. And that cost is ballpark going to run around $15,000. Through the Water Resource Reliability Program, we have $150,000. So 10% of the cost is going to go to checking the rest of the system, with the remaining money going with working with the engineers to prioritize projects, update cost estimates, and put together the infrastructure replacement program. So as we move forward then, and obviously come back to your board with recommendations on who to hire in the relatively near future, we'll go back and we'll also test those water lines that have already been identified as needed to be replaced for fire flows and water quality, because that's part of setting the priorities. If a line has been identified as needed for replacement because of fire flows and it has a lot of leaks associated with it, then it could move up on the priority list, and so that will help us then testing the entire system in prioritizing even the projects that we already know we need to get to. Last reminder is that in the 2009 Master Water Plan, there was about $2.5 million worth of deferred infrastructure for the water system estimated at that point in time. I looked at some of the construction cost indices that you can find on the web, and construction costs since 2009 have increased by approximately 25% over 9 years, and that's running at somewhere between 2 to 3% per year. So that deferred maintenance infrastructure replacement from Master Water Plan to today, in real rough ballpark figures, has moved from $2.5 million to over $3 million. And if we want to use ballpark numbers again, dead on $3 million, if that's the construction costs, and then you have to add in some money for design and stuff, I usually say it's roughly 10% is your annual debt service. So that would be $300,000 in annual debt service for those improvements. We've got some other things that we know we have to look in. If we're collecting about $2 million a year, then $300,000 to $400,000 a year for debt service would represent a 15 to 20% increase over existing rates. That type of a number for deferred infrastructure to me is a lot better than it could be. I'm not anticipating looking at numbers that would be 30% or 50% rate increases. Certainly some of the local communities, for example, Los Osos, has been facing really significant increases, but not just because of deferred infrastructure. They're having to deal with some real significant seawater intrusion and having to develop other facilities as well. And so 15 to 20% as a really rough ballpark figure is still significant. And so as we're moving forward and developing the capital improvement plan, we want to try to reduce that cost by obtaining grant revenues, reduce the annual impact by getting favorable loan terms from either State Water Board or USDA. But the idea is, as we're working through the infrastructure plan and identifying costs with the engineers, we'll translate those project costs into monthly impact, And then the strategy will be, how do we reduce that monthly impact through, if can we obtain grants or favorable financing terms, and or prioritize projects and work them in over time. It's not as if we have to replace everything overnight. Certainly the higher priority projects we're going to want to tackle early, but there's an element of it that can probably be done over multiple years. And we'll get into those strategies as we proceed. But again, we wanted to make sure to bring back this leak detection report and discuss it briefly with your board and make sure to, you know, we appreciate the work that the California Rural Water Association has done for us and the funding that was provided by the State Water Board. And it does reflect a, you know, a bit of the kickoff on the bigger efforts for infrastructure replacement.
I personally appreciate their making this possible for us. And I'm surprised because we hear our water pipes are so bad, but in 7%, 7, 8% of it, we didn't find any leaks.
Yeah.
I mean, we know there's worse pipes, but we also know there's better.
Yeah, and I would suspect, I mean, this is a judgment call, but I would suspect that a lot of the leaks are going to be in those same pipes that have deficient fire flows just because of the age of the pipes. And also with the San Simeon earthquake, there was a lot of damage to pipes that were closer to the beach. And so those were replaced already through the FEMA's emergency funding program. And so there has been a significant number of pipes that were replaced because of the earthquake. And as newer pipes, you wouldn't expect those to be as prone to leaking. But the benefit of having the leak detection program is you just never know where those leaks are going to hit. They can come in pipes that are 2 years old that have been properly inspected. It's called latent defects. It's you inspect the pipe and you don't see any problems, and yet something happens. You know, maybe there's a deformity in the manufacturing of the pipe that isn't easily identifiable, and after 2 years of pressure, you know, it starts leaking. So a lot of the larger agencies that are subject to urban water management plan regulations, Oceano's not, because we have less than 3,000 connections and sell less than 3,000 acre feet of water. I think those are the criteria. But, you know, all of our neighboring cities are mandated to do leak detection programs. Those mandates were recently established during the drought. So to get the funding to do a big leak detection evaluation for the district and then guidance on how to, you know, continue it forward is a really good benefit that the grant programs have provided to Oceano.
Thank you. Any questions?
The only question I had was you talked about the 15,000, I think, estimate as far as to do the full leak detection for the city. And in here, under the other financial considerations, purchasing leak detection. I don't remember. Was that?
Oh, thank you.
Oh.
Because we just got that 15,000 in like 2 days ago.
Yeah. Okay.
So what the staff report speaks to is that, you know, the grant we knew was going to fund leak detection efforts and work. And in the kickoff meeting with members of the, you know, now I got to remind myself if Prop 84 was State Water Board or Department of Water Resources. They're both great agencies, let's just put it at that.
They certainly have been to us.
Yeah, they have been. What was indicated is that the grant may be used possibly, that's a big may, buy leak detection equipment for ourselves. But the evaluation has to be that we have to show that buying the leak detection equipment and doing the work ourselves is less expensive than having an outside outfit come in and do it for us. That the grant is not eligible to buy leak detection equipment for ongoing usage and for operations and maintenance. But if we could show that just for the purpose of the grant and doing this one big project, it's more cost effective to buy it and do it ourselves than to hire a group to come in and do it. Then it could be eligible, and then coincidentally we'd be able to use it for operations and maintenance in the future. But we've pretty much concluded in the last 2 days it's not going to work, because if the equipment itself costs, you know, $15,000 or more, and we can get a group to come in and do it for $15,000. Granted, Tony and Jason and Casey are going to have to do traffic control, but those numbers themselves just, you know, pretty much jumped out at me that it's going to be less expensive to hire a group to come in there and do the work. The other side of it, part of it is because they estimate they can do the entire system in 6 days, which means that they're really moving fast. In the 3 days of testing that we did with California Rural Water Association, we covered 2.5% in a day, which meant that at that rate of production, it would take us 40 days to do the work. And granted, you know, the crews would work faster, because with California Rural Water, there was an educational component to it and how to use the equipment and stuff. But to be able to keep the pace with some of these private outfits that are just moving fast, you know, it just doesn't. So I think the strategy is we're going to have to hire somebody, and then in the future we'll look at what's it going to take to get our own equipment.
Okay. Thank you. Moving on, 9D, generator project update.
Madam President, Board, so this I just wanted to have an opportunity to do a verbal update, and I was thinking I might have some handouts, but that's not the case. And the real quick verbal update is that as we have been proceeding with getting into the depths of the generator project, Tony and I have been asking the consultants and the electricians and electrical engineers questions along the ways. And every question that we ask seems to lead to two more questions. So it's been a little bit frustrating. We are hoping that we would be in front of your board with recommendations a little bit more quickly. But the idea was we started with a single generator that would power up well number 8, as well as the sheriff's building and the fire station, that was essentially replacing the old generator. But the problem with the old generator was that it did not have automatic startup. And that is really the goal with the fire department, is to have automatic startup. Well, obviously, as we wait to get this project approved, we don't have any generator power for the fire station or the sheriff's substation. But one big generator to take care of everything. Well, the second option we started looking at is simply for the well number 8 is having the hookup so we can bring in a portable generator. Because under that one large generator option, the generator itself was going to be very expensive, and all of the transfer switches and the electrical equipment gets very expensive in order to deal with the loads that a big well is going to put on it, the instantaneous startup loads, versus using a generator to power the fire station or the sheriff's building is a much smaller generator. And the cost impacts on the water fund, we're concerned about when we have a number of other priorities and we get water from the county. So the risks associated with the well were less. And so we started looking at the option of having a smaller generator for the sheriff's building and the fire station, and then independently wiring the well for a portable generator to come in. Then we started asking questions, and we were walking around the yard with some of the technical experts, and the idea came, well, you could even maybe just do a smaller generator for the fire station and a smaller generator for the sheriff's building. And that idea sprung from the wiring, because the pre-existing generator did not have startup, so in order to get it to automatically start up, we have to have some equipment near the fire station, which would mean digging up trenches and digging up parking lot and start increasing costs there. So the bottom line right now is we have three different alternatives that we're evaluating, but we don't have all the cost details and the risks associated with each, and that's really what our next step is. And I suspect it's going to be one of those calls where your board gets to make the decision that one project alternative may look less expensive, assuming nothing goes wrong. But if something goes wrong, then it's going to be more expensive versus if you go with this other option, it looks like it might be a little bit more expensive, you know, up front, but it doesn't have the risks associated with it. So there's going to be more, a greater level of certainty with that second project. So we're trying to nail down those details, and the bottom line is it's ultimately going to come back to a cost and risk analysis. There is not going to be an alternative that is clearly this is the best way to go. The throw in another little variable, and that is that if each has its own separate generator, which there are definitely operating advantages to having the separate generators, also the transformers and some of those other specialty pieces of equipment that the electrical engineers talk about will go away. Because each of the facilities is on its own regular power. But to have an isolated generator for the fire station, about the only place that it could be located is in the median landscaping strip right in front of the office. Yeah, because that's where the power comes in directly to the fire station. The units aren't small. It would fit there, but we figure we'd probably have to do something aesthetic. And I'm always real concerned about aesthetics because those are the types of things that can create emotions in the public. And you might think, well, it's not that big of a deal until it's built, and then people are like, that's really ugly. So big generators in front of buildings can look pretty ugly. And so what can we do to design a structure that both protects it from vandalism as well as looks nice. So we really have costs, risks, and a little bit of aesthetics that we have to address before coming back to your board.
Maybe we should paint it like, so it looks like a fire truck.
No, see, that's the one of the great reasons of coming out here, right? Or a big Tonka toy.
There you go.
More agapanthus.
I think we'll see less agapanthus, so it would take up, I don't know, about 10 feet of that median strip, I think.
Night-blooming jasmine.
Yeah. Well, split-faced cinder block on the one wall to give it some structural look and maybe some lattice over the top in order to fit the architectural style of the existing structures. And I've been driving around looking at different things and snapping some pictures. And
thank you.
We'll see.
Thank you. 9E, consideration of a resolution to readopt Resolution 2013-6 regarding the district's public request policy.
And Madam President, members of the board, this item is in front of you because as part of the district's current efforts, Nicole Miller is going back and she's scanning all the prior agenda items, and I think she's back to about 2010. Part of that is so that we have the quick ability to get to those prior agenda items, and that's going to be important as we're cleaning up our policies and procedures and codes and stuff. And she identified that this Resolution 2013-6 had not been fully executed. It had the president's signature at the time, but it didn't show date of adoption and didn't show the votes that the board had in apparently adopting it. And furthermore, in looking at the district records, we found no minutes from that meeting. And there's really nothing we can do about not having any minutes from that meeting because it was so long ago, we can't... don't even know who was all the, we didn't double check who all the board members were. So we found this deficiency, and it's directly related to public records policies. And then coincidentally, at about the same time, a member of the public had asked for a copy of that action, that specific action. And the one thing about 2013-6, then reviewing the records, what happened at that time is staff had recommended an increase in the cost of reproducing public records. Prior to 2013, the district was charging 10 cents per copy. Staff came in with a recommendation of 25 cents per copy, and that was May 22nd of 2013. The minutes of that meeting clearly illustrate that the board had discussions on whether 25 cents was appropriate or not, and continued the meeting to June. And then that's where we saw the executed resolution at 20 cents. So clearly staff originally proposed it at 25 cents. Board had discussion, continued the item. It was signed at 20 cents. And that provides a lot of good evidence that it was actually adopted, because why would it have been modified from 25 cents to 20% to 20 cents if the board hadn't concluded the deliberations and taken action? But again, lacking minutes in order to show what was truly adopted, we thought the best course of action was simply to bring it back to your board and to have it readopted. And we've looked at the details of the resolution and don't have any modified, no recommendations to modify it. It's simply to adopt it as it was apparently adopted in 2013.
Anybody got any discussion or comments? Or? I remember that there was public comment. There was a lot of, it was a real issue at the time.
Yeah, we expected it should be all free at the time,
too. Yeah, that was the issue. Everybody wanted it free, and of course you can't really give away.
Well, it got to be, you know, every day somebody was coming in wanting documents and eating up time, so we thought, yeah, we should be at least charging something for them.
And, you know, given 2013 and some of the district's prior history, I'm not surprised that there was a lot of requests for mm-hmm. public information at that time.
Exactly.
Currently, you know, the number of requests that we get today is really pretty minimal. So I can see how it might have been a controversial issue several years ago, and it's really not anymore.
And the website also helps.
Yes, and that project is progressing, and certainly part of the idea of scanning prior agendas is that the more that we can get loaded on the website, then the easier it is for the public to access it directly. And if we get a public records request that relates to information that we have on the website, then we just simply get a respond and, you know, maybe give them the link, but when it's publicly available like that, then it certainly helps with reducing the amount of staff time necessary to respond to public information requests.
So do I have a motion?
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we adopt a resolution readopting resolution 2013-6 regarding the district's public records policy.
Second.
And this is a roll call vote?
Yes. Roll call vote, please. It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Bernay?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Director Colwell?
Yes.
Vice President Austin? President White?
Yes.
And we will make sure to sufficiently fill out the resolution this time.
Yes. And with this is the request for public records also that I noticed. Is that a part of the resolution?
Yeah, that's an attachment. That's an attachment. And for Claire, so the public is not required to fill out that form. It's just encouraged. It helps us to identify documents. But Yeah, we can't require, nor would we want to require them to fill out the form. They have to submit us something so that we know what it is that they're asking for. But a lot of agencies have the form and hope people will use it, but it's not a requirement.
Certainly it would be convenient
for
the people involved. Yes. Thank you.
I did have one question just regarding the scanning of the documents. The current software that scans, does it pick up words or is it just the page? Just curious.
When we scan, I think it, well, I know that I've found somewhere I've had to go in through there and use Adobe Acrobat in order to do text recognition.
Okay.
And what I'm trying to do is recall, I think anything we're scanning, Adobe Acrobat will then go there and do text recognition.
Oh, okay.
And it, you know, it's going to depend on the quality of the document somewhat.
Right.
When we take Word documents or other documents, it's standard protocol to convert them to a PDF document before posting them because we don't want to post a Word document that can be modified. Although today it's not that hard to modify a PDF either. But in any case, most of the times when we save it in a PDF form, it's already text recognized, unless the Word documents are too old.
Okay.
If it's a prior versions of Word, even if we save them as PDF, we'll have to take the additional steps to get text recognition. But I think everything that's scanning, they can do it, it'll.
Yeah, and then it makes it searchable.
It does.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. As a find.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
It's good. Thank you.
Moving on to item 10, hearing item, consideration of a recommendation to approve a resolution to collect delinquent accounts on 2017-2018 property tax bills. And do we have any changes from when this was written?
We do. And so I'll provide a few comments and then Ms. Cassiola has got some modified exhibits relating to water.
Good.
Which is deleting a bunch of the items on the exhibits. The reason for the deletion of a number of the accounts is this year we identified a past practice of the district that we cannot have continue into the future. And what it amounts to is that a number of the, I'll describe the past practice. So when the district has had to shut off water meters in the past, for example, for non-payment of utility bills, the past practice was that we would continue to bill the customer even though we've turned off the meter. And the past practice was we would only stop billing the customer if they requested us to actually pull the meter. And an individual whose name was on this list had come in and wanted to reinstate water service. They had been previously renting their property and had to evict some tenants, and they had it vacant for several months. And the individual had come in and says, I don't understand why the bill is as high it is, because, you know, my wife paid off everything that we owed in, like, February. So I looked at the details associated with it, and I said, well, look, there's a little bit, you know, she made a payment in January, but you still had your February bill that came through. So there was still some water consumption after her payment date. And so, yes, you still do owe some money. But then it became obvious that we were still billing them even after we turned off water service, and there was zero consumption associated with the account. And that Tony had mentioned he had gone and checked on everybody who had been locked off, because I also wanted to verify that none of these accounts had cut the lock and, you know, maybe were illegally using water or something. The zero meter reads would indicate that that was unlikely. But we wanted to check, make sure the premises weren't occupied and that the locks hadn't been cut off. And in fact, we had. So what happened is the past practice was, well, once you got turned off, the district would still continue to bill you the minimum monthly bill. And so you've been turned off or not paying, and then the bill just keeps coming and coming and growing. And, you know, we settled a claim with an individual this past year who argued that you're billing me even though I don't, or you had been billing me even though I don't get any service from you. And the idea is we settled the claim, as did the sanitation district, because if we're not providing service, we can't bill them. And so once we turn off service, we have to stop billing. The past practice developed because whomever said, yeah, but the system is still available to them, and it's not fair if they don't pay. Well, that has some logic to it, but that's not how Proposition 218 works. Prop 218 says you can only bill them for services if you're providing them service. And if you've cut the service off, then obviously you're not providing it, regardless of whether you pulled a meter or not. So through this individual's actions and coming to us and talking to the bill, we identified this past practice. And so our recommendation is then to take a number of these items off of the tax roll bill because they only reflect charges for when service was not being provided. Now, on that second issue of the system is available to them, yes, Proposition 218 provides the ability to create availability charges, but the district hasn't done that. Availability charges, also known as standby charges, require property owner's approval. Normal service charges, your board can adopt through ordinances. The public can protest it, but your board still has the authority to adopt an ordinance and increase service charges for when we're providing service. But availability charges are considered to be assessments, and you have to get property owner approval for that. Whether the district wants to do that or not is a different question, and certainly is one of the many options we'll be talking about when we address how to develop funding for deferred infrastructure, because there is a valid case that if someone's got property in Oceano and service is available to them, that even if they haven't built a house on it yet, they should help pay for that infrastructure. And certainly availability charges and standby charges exist in a lot of communities. But again, we don't have that in place. It requires property owner approval. It's something that your board might wish to consider in the future. But when we stop service, we have to stop charging. And so Carrie has a revised exhibit.
So I have the printout of the revised report on charges and delinquencies. As you can see, the three that were on there were customers that had been locked off, and we only have one remaining but has made payments towards their charges since the agenda has been out. So you will see the adjusted amount. So the new balance will be $2,147.81 compared to the $5,707.57 that was originally provided in your packet.
Okay. There is no change in the garbage?
No change in garbage.
Can I ask, what was the fee that was being charged per month?
So our basic is around $45 every 2 months.
Okay.
So a couple of these, they had been locked off in a prior year, and so the entire charges for this, yeah, we had to reverse. The individual who came in and paid, we looked at, that was a current year bill, so we were able to explain to them that, look, at all these months before you got locked off, you had service, so they paid up what they needed to pay up.
Okay.
So the recommendation then would be to approve the attached resolution as modified.
Then I'd move that we approve resolution 2017-18 as amended.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded.
Quick clarification. I don't...
I see.
Probably not a resolution number on it yet.
Yeah. Right.
As a matter of practice,
no number.
Okay, well then I would amend the motion that we approve as amended the recommendation to collect the delinquent accounts.
Even though nobody's from public, we still need to...
Oh, I forgot because it wasn't on here. Yes, I'd like to... It's been moved and seconded, and right now we can have any public comment before we take a vote.
Did we have a second?
Confirm my second.
Yeah, he confirmed my second. Okay, it's a resolution, and be a roll call vote, please.
Director Bernay?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Director Colwell?
Yes.
Vice President Austin? President White?
Yes. All right. Moving on, 11, any written communication or late written communication? We had the written communication already. But
correct. Yeah.
None?
I have no additional.
Okay, looking at future agenda items.
And future hearing items. So next meeting on July 26th is going to be... your board will be considering rescinding resolution district resolution 2014-15 relating to the drought emergency. We set this date a little while ago, and then that will trigger the need to come back before August on transitioning to the post-drought rates. And so...
Okay. Any? I see we're also going to work on the district, continuing on our district policies.
So we've covered many of the issues associated with bylaws and, your board's governance. Moving back, we've started to identify some other ones. Most specifically, there's some policies associated with utilizing financial institutions, investment policies, and the role of the district's treasurer that we'll be bringing back in the relatively near future. There's some government code requirements that historically the district has not been complying with. We need to report to your board on a quarterly basis of cash receipts and disbursements on each cash account we have. So Carrie and I have been working on that, and we'll be bringing back the proper resolutions and policies on that and then implementing that this fiscal year. And then the other priority is with respect to the human resource policies, because the current memorandum of understanding with SEIU, our union, expires on June 30th, 2015. And so in 2018, June 30, 2018. And so in early 2018, we'll have to sit down with the unions and start negotiating the next MOU. And so to have all of our HR policies cleaned up, and by that point in time, will be important. That way we can incorporate those human resource policies into the review of the MOU. The idea with the HR policies is that we're not looking to make any changes, but the historical records leave a bit to be desired, and so we have to go through and clean up, make them consistent with the adopted MOU, and that whole process of reviewing what the district's human resource policies need to be is subject to meet and confer with the union. So that's going to be one of the priorities, so that when we sit down with them, we can make sure to do that review concurrent with negotiating the new MOU.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, is there any more business to come before this board? Ladies and gentlemen, what is your pleasure?
I'll make a motion. We adjourn.
Second.
Adjourned.